You know, it's no secret that the housing market is still slow across much of the country. NPR's Elizabeth Shogren found that a growing number of realtors, homeowners, and builders are trying to lure buyers by pitching their properties as green.
In Alexandria, Virginia, a huge for sale sign hangs outside a new condominium complex. It promises luxury with a conscience.
What I have to show you are two furnished models. They're both two bedrooms.
Real estate agent Jennifer Halm is showing the place to a prospective buyer.
One of the really exciting things is we're using geothermal, heat and air.
That means instead of a conventional heat pump, these units use a system that pulls heat from the earth during the winter and reverses the process in the summer. Halm says it saves so much energy that residents will pay $100 a month less in utilities, and they'll qualify for big tax breaks.
That is going to boil down to at least $7,000 per unit that you'll be able to take as a credit.
It's the property's flashiest green feature, but there are lots of others.
We use recycled lumber. All of the water is filtered before it's sent back out into the Chesapeake.
The condo's own website is full of details about energy-efficient windows and lighting, water-saving toilets, and cleaner paints. And Halm posted ads touting the complex's earth-friendly enhancements on other real estate websites. Even so, the units aren't moving fast. But Halm says they are selling better than the competition, and she thinks the environmental features help.
It's an added bonus that we're green. I don't think it's as important to people. They want to think it's important, but I think the tax incentive and the savings are more important.
Green hasn't been a silver bullet for architect Robert Narabecki either. He built an environmentally certified house in Bethesda, Maryland, and his realtor advertised it on a national website for green homes.
We had absolutely zero interest locally because of that ad.
Narabecki says potential buyers didn't care about the expensive sustainable wood floors he installed, but many walked away when they learned the house didn't have a two-car garage. It took 7 months to find a buyer for the house, and he had to sell it at a loss.
The green component is, I think, in most people's minds, considered an amenity. And there's a very small section of the population that I found that has got to have green.
Those people have a hard time finding the eco-friendly properties that are out there, and sellers don't often get a payback for their green improvements. That really irritates Kriya Latcher, an agent in Portland, Oregon.
I would notice things like a 1920s house with all of its original appliances, heaters, windows, all of that, and then another 1920s bungalow that had a high-efficiency furnace and the Energy Star appliances, and the seller had done all these things to make it green, and they were selling the same per square foot, and that just made me really upset.
Latcher says the problem was there was no way to search for green homes in the multiple listing services that agents use to advertise properties and appraisers use to value them. So she decided to change that. Now Portland's multiple listing system makes it easier to match up buyers and sellers of green properties. Like this ranch house on a busy street in northeast Portland.
Well, this house has had quite a few things done to it to make it greener. It's got all new windows, and it's got 8 inches of blown-in cellulose insulation.
And it sold at asking price in 22 days, half the average selling time in the neighborhood. Latcher has helped Seattle, Truckee, California, and northern New Mexico develop greener listing services. And the country's biggest multiple listing service, which covers the Washington, D.C. area, has changed its searching system to help agents promote and find eco homes. That creates a new challenge. How will buyers evaluate all the green claims? Elizabeth Shogren, NPR News.
Now to the topic of executive compensation. Today, the government's PAYSAR announced more limits on compensation, covering the four companies that have received the biggest bailouts. The latest limits apply to second-tier executives. At the same time, Goldman Sachs is instituting some of its own restrictions on bonuses. NPR's Janet Stee reports.
The four companies directly affected by the new rules are AIG, Citigroup, GM, and its financing arm, GMAC. In October, Kenneth Feinberg, the government's pay czar, cracked down on the compensation packages of their top 25 executives. This ruling affects the pay of the next 75 highest earners. Among the restrictions is a $500,000 limit on cash compensation and the elimination of guaranteed bonuses.
You have to earn those bonuses through performance. And our preference is that that performance be rewarded in appropriate cases in stock rather than cash, so that the individual's compensation is tied to the overall performance of the company.
In fact, Feinberg said the new rules require that at least 50% of all bonuses be paid in long-term stock held for more than 3 years. Cash bonuses would have to be paid out over a 2-year period. Ironically, late yesterday, Goldman Sachs, maybe the healthiest and most profitable firm on Wall Street, said that its top executives would receive their 2009 bonuses in stock, which they can't sell for 5 years. Goldman has weathered public outrage over its plans to pay out record bonuses 1 year after taking and then paying back billions in government aid. Feinberg said he thinks the government's effort to set guidelines for executive pay may have played some role in Goldman's decision and others like it.
These are the type of determinations that are consistent with what we've been advancing over the past few months, and these are good signs.
But executive pay consultant Stephen Hall disagrees.
I'm not sure how people on Main Street, who I think are voicing a lot of this outrage right now, I'm not sure how they're being made better out of this whole thing. And in fact, in some cases, we might even be able to argue that they're worse off because there's no tax revenue coming into the states or federal government from these amounts being paid to people.
Hall also worries that talented executives are leaving these troubled companies because of limits on pay. Feinberg said that was also a concern of the four companies he's overseeing, so he exempted nearly a dozen executives from the caps.
It's written right in the law that my determinations concerning compensation must be based at least in part on these companies thriving, retaining talent, paying competitive wages. So it is a factor, a very important factor. I think we've struck the balance pretty well.
Because they're coming so late in the year, the restrictions announced today won't have much effect on executive salaries for 2009. But any year-end bonuses will be governed by the new rules. And the rules will set a baseline for salaries at covered companies for 2010. Chrysler and its financing arm are excluded from the deal because all of their second-tier executives will make less than $500,000 in 2009. John Itzty, NPR News, Washington.
The U.S. Treasury Department has started to dispatch what it's calling foreclosure SWAT teams to the major banks. Officials are looking at bank call centers, a first stop for many homeowners who need help with their mortgages. NPR's Chris Arnold has the story.
The Treasury Department said this past week that about 750,000 people have so far had their mortgage payments reduced through the president's foreclosure plan. But the vast majority of those people, more than 95%, are just in the temporary trial stage of the program, so they still might lose their houses. To get permanent help, a homeowner has to go through the lender that's managing their loan. You need help, you have to call the banks. And so that puts the bank's call centers at the center of the foreclosure crisis. The fate of millions of homeowners rests upon what happens inside of those call centers.
Sir, at this time, I'm not getting a recommendation for modification.
A few months ago, we did a story on one of the main call centers run by Bank of America. We saw some homeowners getting rescued from foreclosure and offered more affordable payments, but we also saw some problems. At one point, a call center worker named Crystal Ingram told a homeowner that he didn't qualify for help through the president's plan. The computer rejected him, but it shouldn't have.
But it does seem like this same guy might qualify for the loan modification.
He wouldn't qualify for an interest rate reduction.
When we pursued the issue with supervisors, it turned out that the person actually did qualify, and the homeowner was later offered a loan modification. We've been following up with Bank of America. The bank says that it has a second review system to catch such mistakes. But 3 months after our visit, the bank still hasn't been able to tell us why the computer appeared to be rejecting homeowners who actually were eligible for help. Problems like this seem to be widespread at many of the major banks.
It's sort of a nightmare. to put it bluntly.
Andrew Jakubowicz is an economist with the Center for American Progress. It's a think tank that's aligned with the Obama administration. He says there have been all kinds of complaints. Homeowners say that they fax in information and then the banks lose it. Some banks say that people who make way too much money are trying to get help when they don't need it, and they're clogging up the system. So this month, Assistant Treasury Secretary Michael Barr said the administration would dispatch SWAT teams to the banks. He calls the banks loan servicers.
And SWAT teams made up of Treasury staff as well as staff from Fannie Mae as our program administrator will be sent to the top servicer shops this week.
It turns out that the SWAT teams actually consist of three people making three-day visits to the banks. Also, there might be fines for companies that aren't doing what they should be. But many experts were underwhelmed by the government's crackdown.
The problems that we're having with the program really require much more aggressive steps.
Andrew Jakubowicz thinks the president's plan should be reaching a lot more people. He says that'd be good for the housing market and the whole economy. And he says it's hard to tell exactly what's tangling things up at these call centers.
I think there's still a lot of he said, she said. So if you ask the banks, they say, oh, we just never get stuff back from the homeowners. You ask the homeowners and the counselors, they say, look, we've sent this stuff in tons of times. We have no idea what's going on. Every time we call somebody, we speak to somebody else who's never heard of the last person that we've talked to. Well, the truth obviously has to be something.
And so the Treasury Department sending SWAT teams for 3 days sort of begs the question, why only 3 days? Jakubowicz thinks better oversight could really help to figure out what's going on and prevent a lot more foreclosures. So why not put government officials inside of the call centers more permanently?
By having people in the call centers, I think we'd get to the bottom of this and really improve the operation of the program as a whole.
Bank examiners already monitor all sorts of other things that the banks are doing. And insurance companies, it turns out, have people already inside of the banks full time looking out for their interests when it comes to foreclosures. We pressed the Treasury Department about this after they announced the SWAT team visits. Phyllis Caldwell is in charge of this new oversight effort at Treasury.
Is there some thought of doing something more than 3 days? Or?
At this point, the thought is doing it for the 3 days and evaluating what the next steps are, but we're committed to doing whatever it takes.
In the meantime, the administration says despite what the skeptics say, the plan is still on track to help upwards of 3 million people avoid foreclosure. Chris Arnold, NPR News.
You're listening to NPR News.
Retail hiring is up this holiday season, at least compared with last year. Numbers released yesterday show that retail sales rose in November. Still, merchants are worried about the mood of their customers during this holiday season. NPR's Sam Sanders visited some retail stores in Washington, D.C. to see if shopkeepers still have hopes for a jolly Christmas.
The Labor Department says store hiring was pretty good in November. It was up more than a third over last year. That's when the U.S. economy seemed to be heading towards collapse. And another government report shows sales ticked up, too. Still,
no one's real bright about the future after Christmas. You know, there isn't really good news coming out other than they were. The holiday hiring was up.
That's Dexter Howe from Green Pets, an all-natural and organic pet store. His outlook for the holiday season and beyond is bleak, even though his store added 2 seasonal employees.
I don't think anyone sees anything changing in the next 6 months. I really don't.
The retail data suggests Hal shouldn't be quite so gloomy. November sales were up 1.3%, according to the Commerce Department. A lot of that growth came from car and gasoline sales, but even without those, sales were up slightly. Still, analysts say they understand retailers' wariness as they come out of this brutal recession. They're hoping for good news, but they know their customers have taken a beating.
I think this particular recession was a rather different one, particularly for the retail sector, will be one where confidence only comes back very gradually and more gradually than in the past.
That's Nigel Gault, a retail analyst with IHS Global Insight, a forecasting firm. He says merchants are hoping their customers will suddenly open their wallets, and consumers are hoping the stores will slash prices even more.
We do at the moment have a little bit of a game of chicken where the consumers are holding out for bigger discounts and the retailers are hoping that the consumers are going to come back and start spending before they have to put in the huge discounts. And clearly, you know, the middle part of December that we're entering right now, I think is going to be critical.
This time may be critical, but it's not a very merry one. Stressed out retailers say their bargain-hungry customers just aren't that much fun.
They're not happy. I mean, normally during Christmas time, people are happy and laughing and joking. And even last year, I noticed that around Christmas, people usually come in from parties and they've had a little bit to drink and you're just having a ball. That didn't exist last year, and it certainly hasn't started yet this year.
That's Steve Cohen, the owner of Lane's Luggage. He's so worried about customers holding back that he's cut hours for his staff of five. He's also decreased inventory, but he is trying to remain optimistic.
I'm hopeful. I mean, I just don't know anymore. You know, I can't predict who's going to come through our door and what they want.
Who walks through that door this weekend and next could well determine whether this holiday season starts a retail rebound in 2010. Sam Sanders, NPR News.
This is NPR News.